most empowering thing we can say to ourselves, because then we've given up to power. If we believe ever that war is inevitable and that we don't have the power in our hands to stop it.
Well, Ali Abunima, I just want to add that I just got some details from Spain, where some 2 million people protested around the country. That's significant because Spain was jumping in bed with the United States. And let me just some cities: Sevilla, 200,000 people; Cadiz, 70,000 people; Las Palmas, 100,000 people; Oviedo, 200,000 people; Zaragoza, forgive my pronunciation, 200,000 people. So these protests are huge. Now, Ali, please make a very brief comment about the way in which the U.S. press drops the ball when it comes to this incredible dual standard. You know, Israel has, what, 100, 200 nuclear weapons. There are United Nations resolutions that Israel is ignoring. How does the media deal with this?
Well, they deal with it by not talking about it, Dennis. I mean, if people knew what Israel was doing, that Israel, you know, Israel, how did Israel obtain its nuclear weapons? It obtained them by cheating the United States. Back in the 1960s, the United States made a deal with Israel, just like it made with North Korea, that we will help you to establish civilian nuclear energy if you refrain from building nuclear weapons. And at that time, the Nobel Prize winner, Shimon Peres, was in charge of the nuclear program. And Kennedy, President Kennedy, sent nuclear inspectors to Israel. And the Israelis set up a fake control center with a fake reactor to fool the American inspectors. And what has been the response of the U.S. government and the U.S. press to that kind of cheating? It's to pour billions upon billions into Israel to help Israel's nuclear and other weapons programs, turn a blind eye to their nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. Now, if you just look at the newspapers in this country and compare them with what's going on in the British papers and the French papers all over the world, and you see that not just on Israel but on Iraq, how the media have taken the government to task. I mean, it's pathetic, Dennis, the way the media in this country lined up editorial after editorial to say what a strong, powerful performance Colin Powell gave. And they line up to say this is a matter of principle and the credibility of the UN. Well, how many? Israel is in violation of dozens of Security Council resolutions, which are absolutely explicit, and it's violating them every day. Each time a bulldozer destroys a Palestinian home or destroys a tree, that's another material breach of a UN Security Council resolution. How many times has the Security Council said, we, Israel, will face serious consequences if it does not stop these violations? And how many times has the Security Council actually met to follow up on its resolutions? Not one single time. And why, Dennis? Because the United States has consistently blocked any Security Council action to enforce these resolutions. And how do they get away with it? They get away with it because our media keep the public in the dark, keep people in the dark, keep them scared, keep them duct taping up their windows, for heaven's sake, so they don't realize what's going on. You know, it's incredible, Dennis, that the sympathy that the United States gained around the world after September 11th has been squandered to such a point that millions of people, unprecedented millions of people, are coming out into the streets to protest what this country and what this government are doing. And our media are behaving like the cheering gallery for the government. They're too afraid to challenge it. They're too afraid to call Colin Powell a liar, a man who went before the Security Council and said there are terrorist poison camps in northern Iraq. The world's media went there. The Observer, the BBC, a bunch of international media, they found a bunch of mud huts and a kitchen. And which of our media reported that, Dennis? Which journalist stood up in the State Department briefing and said, Mr. Powell should appear before us and explain how he can say these things to the world to drag us into a war, and it all turns out to be lies? Where is the fourth estate, Dennis? It's something unbelievable. I think the world are pretty shocked when they understand that we have here a media that behaves, is more cowed than the media we have in countries where journalists get arrested and thrown into jail for doing their jobs. None of them get arrested or thrown in jail in this country, but they get their privileges taken away. And that, the corporate media, we have to remember, they want war. Why? Because war is a better story than peace. War sells. They can keep people scared and glued to their sets so they can sell us Lexuses and whatever other things they're selling us while we're watching General Dynamics and Boeing and all the others making a fortune by raining thousands of missiles on Iraq.
Ali Abunima is the co-founder of the new web portal electronic-iraq.net. Ali, stand by. I want to tell people you're listening to a National Pacifica teach-in on the war and people's opposition to that war. The statistics are unbelievable. 40,000 in Bern, Switzerland, 30,000 in Glasgow, Scotland, 25,000 in Copenhagen, and the list goes on and on. In a few minutes, we're going to bring in Davey D of Hard Knock Radio. We're going to be talking about the crackdown on civil liberties, civil rights. We've got some very interesting material. We want to see if we can just get in one or two quick questions and then very quick answers so that we can bring Davey D into this and get into the next segment. So, question, sir.
Hello, my name is Bashir Anastas. I live in Auckland. As a Palestinian-American, I very much appreciate the perspective and insight provided by people like Joel Benin and Ilan Pape, who spoke at Cal on Thursday. The link between the drive for war and the policies of Likud and Sharon in Palestine and Israel is an important one that you won't find in the mainstream media. My question is, how should people of conscience in this country prepare and react should the unthinkable ethnic cleansing and expulsion happen in the occupied territories under the fog of war with Iraq?
Let me reiterate what I said earlier. I think it's unlikely, not totally inconceivable, but unlikely, that Israel will try to push out tens or hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from the West Bank. That sort of thing would blacken Israel's reputation in the world and make it impossible for Israel to make the sorts of claims that it does about itself, which are not only propaganda. They're very important for Israel's self-image, that Israel is a democracy, that it's the inheritor of the Enlightenment traditions, and so forth and so on. What I think is more likely to happen is that Israel will round up several hundred or several thousand activists, political leaders, intellectuals, and deport them so as to leave the rest of the population in the West Bank without a leadership. They're already almost without a leadership because people are locked up in their houses and can't get to, from one place to another, but this would make it more absolute. So first, I think we need to be aware that this is a possibility. It's a possibility because Israeli journalists and political figures are speaking about it actively, and it's a possibility because it's entirely consistent with the Likud vision for annexing the occupied territories.
And very briefly, yes. Let me just very briefly.
Yeah,
please.
The danger is yes, they may not be able to just load people into buses and throw them on the borders, but there's an attrition going on. And just coming back from Jordan, people are so strangled, and Jordan is imposing restrictions in the name of fearing an influx of people, that this attrition, this drainage, is as dangerous as transfer. And the other point is, it's not just the physical uprooting of the people. It's the attempt to kill, to liquidate the whole cause of the Palestinian people and to set it back decades to come. I don't think they will agree, but they will necessarily succeed. But this is very dangerous, that people have to be aware of it, and the American people have to be aware about the blowback, because it will come back to haunt America.
We're going to have to leave it right there. I'm very sorry. There are more questions from the audience, but you're going to have to hold on. We're going to have to take a break. Say goodbye to Lamis Andoni, Joel Benin, Ali Abunima. Terrific information, and we thank you for the great contribution. We'll take a musical break. We'll be back with Davey D's, civil rights, racial profiling, you name it. We'll do it. Stay with us. Back, you're listening to a national teach-in on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein, and we are going until 4 o'clock. We are now joined by a co-host for this broadcast, Davey D. He is the host of...
What's up, y'all?
He is the host of KPFA's excellent program for youth and for those young at heart, Hard Knock Radio. He is a media professional with extensive experience in the mainstream media. He covers many issues we are talking about today on this program, including racial profiling, threats of civil rights, and incredible music. Let's not forget
that. That's right. Lots of music out there.
Lots of music out there. And Davey, it's great to be behind microphones with you again.
I know. Me and Dennis have a long history. When I was working at other stations, Dennis has come on and caused trouble, but it's all good, you know, because he's prepared and always puts the guests on the hot seat. So,
well, Davey, talk a little bit about that. You were over at KMEL. Remind people of what that station was. It sort of still exists, maybe, kind of. Mm-hmm. And what happened?
Well, what we're talking about is mainstream radio, urban, and the station that I used to work for was the... probably a flagship station, and was the station that put in motion the template that is used by a lot of urban stations all around the country that pattern themselves as being a station for hip-hop and R&B, meaning that they reach that particular audience and have come up with a good formula. And I guess the controversy that surrounds me is the fact that maybe 2 days after Barbara Lee gave her historic no vote, I, being good friends with her, got her on the air before anybody else did, and she explained in great detail as to why she said no. And we, in turn, put it in a transcript and sent it out to a listserv I have of about 100,000 people. The following week, I was gone after 11 years, and the station claims to this day that it was budget cuts. And people are like, how do you let somebody go after 11 years, and especially when we were doing a show that had everybody from Jesse Jackson to the First Lady, you name it, we've had them on our show. And especially at a time when people wanted to talk, you know, if there's any time to have people who are doing talk shows, that would have been it. And so you could, you know, read between the lines and take your own swipe at it. I don't think it was just budget cuts, and that's where we're at. But with that being said, silencing voices does not mean that people remain docile and in the dark. People find other ways to get their message out, and they find other ways to get their perspectives heard. And so since 9/11, what has happened? I mean, of course, we have a very successful show on Hard Knock Radio, so that's been really good. And more importantly, we have a lot of artists from Paris on down to Black Alicious, all these hip-hop artists who have gone out and put out songs talking very specifically about 9/11 and what's happened on all those templated stations. They don't play those records, even when the artists are really popular. So you're talking about a few gatekeepers trying to keep voices down.
You know, Davey, we always talk about censorship in terms of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, the censorship in terms of cultural censorship, music and the arts, is much deeper, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think because when you talk about music and arts, and especially in a lot of communities where traditionally the only way that they could really communicate and get a lot of people in a circle or around a particular cause was through music or certain artistic expressions, you can see the influence. So you take a hip-hop group like Public Enemy that did a song about George Bush, Son of a Bush. Now, what happens if Public Enemy was to have that song played on rotation every day, all the time, like Ja Rule, who's not saying anything? That would have an influence. So what do you have Public Enemy coming out with their anti-George Bush song, and then you have a video outlet like MTV saying, oh, you mentioned Momia in the hook, so we can't play the video, and causing that type of drama. Meanwhile, you can have naked women running across on TRL and all these other shows, and it's perfectly okay. So these are the type of things, and the solution to it is not to look at the whole institution, but know who made the decision. If it's Mel Karmazon that oversees Viacom, you need to jam them up. If it's Stephen Hill over at BET, where they have 106 in Park, and all these videos coming across, but no discussion about any of the anti-war efforts that have been coming forth, in particular from their own peers, then you need to jam that person up, because he's the gatekeeper, the person who has the final say-so.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, a legend in hip-hop, and we are delighted to have him now as a co-host on this national special against the war and in support of a global movement against war. And Davey, it's been happening all over the country, and it's been happening all over the world, and it's been happening to the point where the U.S. and Great Britain, I don't know if you heard this, they had to rethink the resolution they were about to present to the United Nations and take out that word called war. So we're delighted that the people have some power and a lot of power in this world. In one moment, we're going to be talking more about the crackdown in terms of civil liberties, racial profiling, but we want to get another report from one of our affiliates. Kevin is in Arcata, and he's standing by with the mayor there. Kevin, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you, Dennis.
Set the scene.
Standing here on the Arcata Plaza, and where hundreds have gathered under rainy skies to protest the looming U.S. military action against Iraq, and it replicates, of course, similar protests taking place around the world. And it's not just the usual suspects who gathered every Friday evening in growing numbers on Arcata Town Square to protest U.S. militarism in recent months. Today, right now, families, seniors, and mainstream community members, many bearing homemade signs, are listening as speaker after speaker is denouncing the Bush administration's Middle East tactics and strategy on all kinds of grounds, moral, spiritual, environmental, and just typical common sense. The mayor actually has run off to use a porta potty here, but here he comes. And it's real and it's live. They've been singing, and we've got just a lot going on. Mayor Bob Ornelas may have a comment or two here. Bob? Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Mr. Mayor, how come you came out today in Arcata to, did you come out to protest the war, or are you for the war?
What idiot would be for this one, huh?
Well, tell us why you're there and what's driving you and why you think it's important for people to be out in the streets today.
Well, you know, I come from, a lot of people who have served in the military and have come out against the war. whichever war it is. But for the last 30 years, you know, since the Vietnam War, I've been anti-nuclear and anti-war. And if you saw the 1,000 people that are here right now in the rain, you'd think it was great. But, hell, there's millions and millions of people at, you know, protesting this war.
Mr. Mayor, I have a quick question for you. This is Davey D. You know, typically when we hear news broadcasts, they make the they imply that elected officials might find their careers in jeopardy if they come out against this war and come out against some of the policies that Bush has put forth. From your standpoint, maybe it doesn't directly affect you, but looking at it as an elected official with relationship to your colleagues, how realistic is that? I mean, can more elected officials come out and maybe even push forth legislation that counters what is currently being offered?
Well, what's more pro-life than being pro-peace and anti-war? Now, I've served on the Arcata City Council. This is my third term, and as I've said many times, everybody knows Bob Ornelas is a peacenik. My town is in solidarity with the people all over the world. You know, we believe in local economics, living local, thinking local, thinking global, and we're really concerned about the quality of life of people all over the world. Sure, there's a few selfish people in the community, and they even call themselves Christians.
Well, Mr. Mayor, we're going to have to leave it right that leave it right there. Please say goodbye to Kevin for us, and
okay.
We thank you and Arcata for joining us on this special
what
national.
What state is Arcata? Is that Arcadia, California?
It's way up there. That's
Arcata. Okay.
Humboldt,
okay.
1 hour south of Oregon.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for being with us. And this is Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. That's Davey D. We're now going to get deeper into this attack on civil liberties and civil rights, and we're delighted to be joined by Michael Ratner. He's the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York City, and he has been on the forefront of trying to hold them back. Michael Ratner, welcome back to Pacifica Radio.
Good to be here with you, Dennis, and Davey D., who I've admired for a long time and very supportive of your struggle.
Thank you.
A few months ago and almost a year and a half ago now. Really, it's an honor to be on a program with you, Davey.
Well, it's good to have you, Mike. How you doing?
I'm good, but I'm interested. You and Dennis have been really pushing them back a little, and I think we're winning a little bit, it looks like.
Before we jump into the technicalities here, just give us a quick report. What was it like in New York today?
Well, let me tell you, Dennis, I'm in the only place in the United States that didn't have a demonstration. I'm in Miami Beach.
Oh, that's right.
Unfortunately,
I forgot.
I worked all the way up until yesterday on the demo, and then I unfortunately had a family reason.
All right.
But I heard reports firsthand from cell phones that were just extraordinary. I have members of my family who are business people were there, and who went out for this demonstration, the first one probably since 30 years ago. One of my relatives designed this great sign of the five people: Bush, Cheney, Powell. And put duct tape over their mouths and had huge posters of them with duct tape. And these are business people. So let me tell you, this was massive. People were thrilled by it. I mean, I think all over the world. I mean, even the news coverage is shifting a little bit. I mean, I think we're winning. I think we can actually do it this time. I mean, I'm just in awe of what's going on.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to ask you just a question. Then we're going to have to ask you to hold over because we're going to have to do a little pitch break and let the local stations identify themselves. But before we bring you back at the top of the hour, we have Patriot Act 1. Remind people what that has meant to civil liberties. And if they get away with Patriot Act 2, what's that going to mean?
Okay, Dennis, we'll be done.
Well, you can begin now.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you were going to take
that's
a break.
That's the opening salvo.
Okay. Patriot Act 1, along with a number of other measures that were taken right after 9/11, did a number of things. First, it allowed for preventive detention for the first time in the United States, which basically meant you could pick people up off the street, put them into a prison, and solely on the affidavit of John Ashcroft, leave them in there essentially forever. Secondly, it set up a new crime of domestic terrorism, which basically, if you look at a demonstration like today, to the extent there's civil disobedience, and it stops an ambulance from getting to a hospital because the street is blocked, they could charge you with being a domestic terrorist. Third, it just wiped out the Fourth Amendment almost entirely. It allowed broad wiretapping of American citizens and others in the United States without going through the regular court system. on and on in that vein. It allowed, basically, during that period, widespread FBI spying, total cooperation with the FBI and CIA, essentially allowing the CIA to operate in the United States. And, of course, that's what the law did, and we know what was happening on the ground. We know that after 9/11, 1,500 and maybe as many as 3,000 people from Arabic countries, Muslims, were arrested, put in jail, and have, some of them are still sitting in there, no crime. None of them were charged with a terror-related crime, all picked up pursuant to the Patriot Act and pursuant, basically, to what this government...
Michael, I have a quick question for you. You know, during Bush's speech the other day, he made an appeal to law enforcement, which was to have them start putting together names and put them on a list so that they can establish a database pretty similar to the gang databases that you find in a lot of large cities. How far along will that take to be implemented, and what should we be doing at this point in time, and what will the implications be for the average ordinary person if that goes into effect?
You know, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I would have laughed at that risk. But right now, with the kind of way they're using preventive detention and the way they're putting even, you know, so-called enemy combatants in jail with no court review, I don't think any of us should doubt that they will be putting a list together like they had in the 50s and the 60s. They had this kind of list. It was called the Administrative Index. They had people on that list. In case of really a serious, you know, civil disobedience in this country, they could crack down and put people into camps, and that's what they could do. And what we have to be doing at every single instance, basically, is saying to our members of Congress and saying in the street, we don't want this kind of FBI surveillance. We don't want the FBI intrusions. We don't want surveillance people in our camps. But, you know, the biggest thing about all this, Dennis, and it's, and Davey, and what happened in even this demonstration in New York in terms of the court position, is as long as there is fear in the American people, as long as they can sell the idea that there's a war going on constantly and will be for the next 50 years, American people are going to be willing to accept a lot of these draconian measures on civil liberties. So there's an intimate relationship. When you ask me what to do, one way we can get back our civil liberties in this country is to make sure that we're not fighting wars all over the world that are making us fearful and unsafe.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and I guess we'll do a lot of things when it comes to fear and sex. People do all kind of crazy stuff.
Well,
they're willing to make.
We're going to talk more about civil liberties.
And we didn't get the Patriot too, but we'll get there.
You hold on, Michael. Whether you're in Miami or New York, I know that you've got something that we all care about, information that's very important, so please stay with us. You are listening to Pacifica Radio. This is a national teaching against the war. I'm Dennis Bernstein. That's Davey D. Stations can break. We're here in the studios of KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. And we just have a couple of minutes, Davey. As you know, we're in a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a premium. We've got, we want to make available this three-hour teaching to people. Maybe you just tuned in. You heard a few minutes. You're in, you're out, you're around. We want to make it available to you. And we want to urge you to support Free Speech Radio, to support Hard Knock Radio, to support Flashpoints. And the way you do that is you go to the phone in this very, very brief break.
It's real easy.
And what do? You pick it up and you dial the number, which is
1-800. What is it? 439-KPFA. 1-800-439-KPFA. It better be.
Here we go. It's 510-848-5732. Believe it or not, we say this number a million times, but then we forget it because it haunts us. Right now, we need you to haunt our volunteers there in the subscription room. Please call 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-KPFA, and let's do it. Let's get a quick rush. Support is for a $100 contribution. You can get the 2-CD set of the teach-in. Please call now. If you're listening on other radio stations and you haven't tuned away, support your local community radio station, because we can make a difference, can't we, Dave?
Definitely. And more importantly, all you have to do is go up and down the dial and see the type of rhetoric that they're spewing and see what's missing. And then you would have a better appreciation for the type of programming that you're hearing this afternoon. Very few radio outlets have the ability, have the resources, and have the commitment and the freedom to kind of have this unedited type of programming where we kind of get to the meat of the matter and start nurturing some of these ideas that have been shut out over the past couple of months. So it's real important. It's only $100. I mean, heck, if we had it our way, maybe we could put some corporate commercials move on there. But if we do that, then we wouldn't be able to have this conversation.